show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! This is going to be a little bit different. This is Born in the Front Porch Thursday, since I'm not going to be here for tomorrow, and since we have such a doggone good time with Friday on the Front Porch, I figured we'd bump it up a day. I'm gone tomorrow just because of meeting would have to be attended. I'd rather be here. Believe you me, I would rather be here. It's about a minute past the hour. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find entry to the chat room. That is where you will find the listen live stream. And, yes, it's where you'll also find the PayPal button and the traditional mail address. It is, in fact, you who make up the vast majority of the Horn Family Commune who keep this all going. We have weathered an ugly little crisis toward the end of September, and now we're just trying to get off to the right foot in October. That got a little difficult as of last night. We've divided what we try to raise on a monthly basis by the number of shows one can expect in the month, and that rolls out to about $150 per evening, per show. And last night, of that $150 we needed to raise, we raised $20. So that leaves us this evening trying to raise $280. Not impossible. 28 folks, $10 a piece. 14 folks, $20 a piece. The rest of the math breaks out along similar lines. But it's what we need to do if we were to keep things going. Technically, it's not actually 280. It's 430 because I'm going to be gone tomorrow, but it's still part of the calculation. So, 430, it's how we keep from getting in the kind of spots we were in at the end of the month last month. So any help is deeply appreciated and sincerely appreciated. I think I know what we're going to wind up talking about this evening, both now and later on during the front porch portion of the program, which we will get started shortly after the filibuster. Let me take a peek over into the chat room just to make sure that everything is still on track. I imagine Sparky will probably tell me so in a moment. No, I heard about what had happened in Washington, D.C. today, differently than probably most of the rest of the Horn Family Commune did, because my dear friend and AIC co-founder, Bo Webb, is working up there right now, working on the AIC Act. And I got a call from him about, 15 minutes after 2, and he said, "Bob, start looking around. There's something funny going on up here." He said, "I've heard shots fired. The cops are going crazy. They just turned me around and told me to go back the way I was coming and told me to run doing it." He was walking around onto First Avenue from Pennsylvania. And walking through the archway there at the Library of Congress when they turned him around. And yeah, something strange was going on. I began looking around, and yes, I turned on the for-profit media and Chicken Noodle News and the increasingly useless MSNBC. And there were indeed reports that shots had been fired somewhere around the capital of the United States. And like you, I immediately thought, oh dear God, some teabagger's gone off the deep end. Because all the shooting seemed to be taking place over at the Senate side, which would indicate that it wasn't someone who was, if there was someone doing some shooting, it would indicate that someone was unhappy with the Senate, as opposed to being unhappy with the House, which basically means teabagger. We know now, of course, that that was all wrong. The best that anybody can piece together is that a woman in a black, fairly late model coupe had some sort of an incident down at the White House gates. And that she then turned away and drove toward the Capitol. At the foot of the western side of the Capitol of the United States, she was confronted by police. Capitol Police. Capitol Police, who are deemed to be essential services of the federal government during this shutdown brought about by the intransigence of a low-functioning, high-carotene-infused, rather orange-colored, repig-licking Speaker of the House by the name of John Boehner. Now, I had had a conversation with Bo yesterday, because you get used to seeing certain things a certain way when you're up there, and we've been up there enough to become sort of accustomed to how things are. And one of the things that Bo was telling me yesterday, he said, this shutdown is having an effect on things. And he went on to tell me there that at the corner, there's always a police cruiser at the corner of 1st and Pennsylvania and at the corner of 2nd and Pennsylvania. Well, the cruisers were gone. And these cruisers, Capitol Police cars are always sitting there, engines idling, with a member of the Capitol Police inside them. We happened to be walking by one evening when somebody in like a big rental truck tried to come down Pennsylvania Avenue, and I mean, wham! The steel barriers flew up, and the police cruiser gunned it out into the middle of the road and turned around, jumped out, and stopped the truck. Well, they weren't there yesterday. And Bo said, things are strange around here. And so when I got the call today, yeah, things are strange. You've got a Capitol Police Force that remains on a high level of alert that is deemed to be essential services during this shutdown, who are, in essence, being worked as involuntary servants, who are not allowed to withhold their labor when a bunch of bug-ass Republicans withhold their pay. In other words, exactly as the Republicans like it. You know, they like that whole indentured servitude idea. And so today, with the Capitol Police in a state of what can only be described as likely high dudgeon, worried not only about their typical duties of providing security in the Capitol Hill area, but worried also about whether or not they are going to be able to pay their power bill, or their mortgage, or their car payment, or their insurance, or the water bill, or the sewage bill, or groceries, or had to be at work anyway because they do not have the right to withhold their labor. And so it was that a woman in a late model coupe, don't know what kind, had some sort of an incident down at the White House, was chased by police, and came up to the western side of the United States Capitol, where she was cornered by police, who jumped out of their cars, at least six of them, and pointed their guns at her. At this point in time, I doubt if there are many of us who would be in a very good frame of mind at that point in time. And if you watch the video that was shot by Al Hurra, which is the U.S. the U.S. news service for the Arab world, headquartered out of Iraq, at least at one point, it was created specifically to feed broadcast propaganda during Dim Leader's bloody little assault on the people of the nation of Iraq. Some camera folks from Al Hurra actually caught on video that portion of the incident. One police officer was right up on top looking into the car. This will prove to be important later. There were also there was also a clear view of the front end of the vehicle, which showed no damage that one could relate to her having tried to ram anything at the White House, despite the fact that the for-profit media were hell-bent on reporting it thusly. She tried to ram the gates at the White House, Wolf. But the front of the vehicle was surprisingly undamaged. Don't worry, this is the same horn you're used to tuning into. I have not gone all Alex Jones, and you will not hear me screaming, false flag, Wolverines! No. I think what we had today in Washington, D.C. was an entirely predictable result of the coup, the nasty little revolution that the Republican Party and primarily the teabaggers are trying to run against this country. Remember, the police looked directly into the automobile. They saw the woman, and there is no way that they could not see the infant seat in the car as well, and the toddler in it. For there was a toddler in the car. The woman, with all the guns pointed at her, panics, drives away. As she drives away, the Capitol Police, unpaid, forced to work without any expectation of remuneration for their services, they fire at least seven rounds from their sidearms. There was enough firearm discharge that between the western slope of the Capitol and where Beau was at the Library of Congress, he could smell the gunpowder. The burnt gunpowder, and we hillbillies are, we can smell burnt, we know our burnt gunpowder, as it wafted to him. When shots were fired, other police began yelling to everyone to run, 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 and then to hit the dirt and to shelter in place. As the story developed on air, it became obvious, or it looked like, there was another god-awful shooter situation unfolding before our very eyes. It didn't work out that way. The woman in the car is dead. The toddler is presumably now an orphan. Now, a word about driving in D.C. It is not necessarily fun. Parking is miserable. Driving is not much more fun either, especially during rather busy parts of the day. Agnes, for instance, when we have been up there, would no sooner get behind the wheel of an automobile in Washington, D.C., than she would attempt to fly from the roof of any tall building. And she considers the two things to potentially have a similar outcome. So a question. If you are a mother of a toddler, and if you have a bunch of guns pointed at your toddler, are you going to be capable of much in the way of rational thought? Now, the woman is, of course, being described as having, surely to goodness, she had mental problems. Just before airtime, I was tweeting back and forth as I watched a little bit of Ed Schultz's program, in which he had some guy named Clint Van Zandt on the program, who made the argument that since women have used bomb belts in the Middle East, that the Capitol Police were entirely justified in blowing her the F away, which they did. The woman was unarmed. There was no bomb in the car. All she had was a toddler. Now she's dead and the toddler's an orphan. There was a sad little moment where you saw a Capitol Police officer taking the toddler in his arms and carrying her and putting her in another police cruiser. This nation is absolutely swaddled in paranoia. Brutal fear. And it manifests itself in moments like this. And it was especially real because where the whole thing finally came to an end was at the intersection of 2nd and Constitution, just a few feet away from where Maryland Avenue branches off and runs in front of the building that houses the AIC campaign headquarters. On any given day when I'm in D.C., I walk past that area at least once a day, usually to go to the little grocery store around the corner, or the little baguette bakery across from it, over on Massachusetts. The only shots that were fired by the police. In the Horn chat room right now, Sparky noting the woman was from Connecticut, said to have had mental problems. Two officers were injured, and they are checking her apartment with a robot. The vehicle, it turns out, was an Infiniti. Capitol Police Chief Kim Dine said that her vehicle struck a police car on Capitol Hill before it crashed into a barricade. Chief Dine said, "We have no information that this is related to terrorism or is anything other than an isolated incident." It's an incident, and I guess you could say it's isolated. But how isolated is it really? When a country is this paranoid, this mired in its own terror, scared to death of its own shadow, and armed to the teeth, to suggest that this is anything but another day in the American shooting gallery would be specious at best. Now, this wasn't Washington, D.C., but consider this story. It is out of Concord, New Hampshire. The Concord Monitor has the report. And it concerns 45-year-old grandmother Wendy Lawrence. She was a grandmother from Canterbury, New Hampshire. The event took place in Manchester, New Hampshire. This was another police chase. This happened Monday. A routine traffic stop in which at 6:30 p.m. the 45-year-old grandmother was pulled over when a state trooper saw her allegedly speeding and driving erratically southbound on Interstate 89 in Bow. Upon running her information, the state trooper determined that she was an habitual offender with a suspended driver's license. While he was waiting for the results to come in, she sped off. The state trooper chased her. And upon seeing the vehicle again, the suspect nearly struck a pedestrian when she fled again. Nearly being the operative adverb here. She did not strike a pedestrian and tried to enter Interstate 93 at what was described as a high rate of speed. The state trooper renewed his pursuit and continued to chase the offender. When it all shook out, the state trooper put, let's see here, I've got a photograph. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 rounds through the driver's side of the windshield of the 2001 Chevrolet Monte Carlo. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. No, 11. 11, I think. Maybe 10. 11. 11 rounds. Four of the rounds hit her. One of the rounds hit her in the chest. That's the one that killed her for being a bad driver. She did not at any time brandish a weapon at the state trooper. She did not attempt to hit the state trooper. She did not threaten the state trooper in any way. She was, however, summarily executed for running away from a cop in Manchester, New Hampshire. And that appears to be the case here as well. This woman, mentally ill or not, was summarily executed for running away from the police. Now, lucky for us, we have a Supreme Court that contains a justice by the name of Sammy Alito, who feels that it is perfectly acceptable, for instance, for a police officer to shoot a fleeing young black man in the back of the head when the young black man is a good 30, 40, 50, 60 feet away, climbing a fence, trying to get away, and not providing any threat whatsoever to the police. So my guess is the state trooper in Manchester is in the clear, and my guess is the unpaid, involuntarily forced to perform servitude, Capitol Police will also be cleared as well. But honestly, if you've got your baby in the car and the cops start shooting at you, or some gangbangers start shooting at you, or some freedom protecting Second Amendment guardian of American liberty, Wolverines, start shooting, you do the same thing that everybody around the sound of the shooting did. You flee. Washington Post reporting, Sparky notes, D.C. police chief says it's unclear which law enforcement agencies fired on the driver in the car chase. The Secret Service apparently pursued her from the White House. The vehicles that were all parked around the Infiniti automobile looked like Capitol Police. Fairly familiar with those vehicles. Has anybody gone to check Alex Jones's news feed yet? Has he screamed false flag? Maybe blamed it on the Illuminati? Because we do know, for instance, that out of this, one nasty-ass teabagging POS member of the House of Representatives, by name, dadgummit, I'll have the tab here in a minute. Yeah, what is his name? Hold on here. By name, Congressman Tim Griffin, were the guy not animated, you would think that he was probably kin to Peter Griffin. in short order, ran out to blame President Obama, Harry Reid, and the Democrats for the shooting. I'll be honest. The first thing I thought was that you hear about shots fired on the Senate side and an event that happened down at the White House. White House, Senate. That's not somebody who's upset with Republicans. But there he was, Tim Griffin. Gunshots outside the Capitol, 2:23 p.m. And then he tweets, "Stop the violent rhetoric, President Obama, Chuck Schumer, and Nancy Pelosi. Hashtag disgusting." Well, then he walked it back a little bit. "The shooting today is a terrible and inexcusable tragedy and an act of terrorism. No one but the shooter is to blame. I tweeted out of emotion, but agree that the timing was not helpful." That's what you call a non-apology apology. But he says no one but the shooter is to blame. So he has officially blamed whichever members of law enforcement, and there were apparently several who began firing their weapons, shooting at the back of the woman driving the automobile. Man, they're like clockwork, aren't they? Of course, it wasn't an act of terrorism either. There's nothing about this that says terrorism. The only thing this really points to is the ungodly degree of crippling paranoia that grips this nation. And we have it by the bushel basket full. Jeebus. We are scared of everyone and everything that isn't pasty-faced, doughy, and whiter than a bar of Castile soap. Witness this story out of Yuba City, California, where they play Little League. And in particular, the Sutter Buttes Little League, where a man named Souk Dulai is a member of the Sutter Buttes Little League board and also a Little League coach. He walked out to see "We Want No Hindus" at SBLL keyed into the paint of his truck. So on the one hand, you've got Sikhs being mistaken for being Muslims. You've got a Sikh truck driver in Mississippi who is told that he cannot be afforded due process in a court of law in Mississippi until he takes that rag off his head. Yeah, judge said that. But in California, apparently, Sikhs are not mistaken for Muslims. They are mistaken for Hindus. "We want no Hindus at SBLL. At least it didn't say we don't want no Hindus. We are scared witless. We are a coward people." C-O-W-E-R-E-D. We are quaking and defecating ourselves in a corner in fear of everything that we don't understand, don't know, or don't like. And there's plenty of all three to go around. Mercy. What a weird, weird day. News Ninja Gene also reporting, News Ninja Gene says the BBC has also reported that the car crashed the barricade, as well as reporting an exchange of gunfire. The only giveaway was that the story was aired quite late in the broadcast. There was no exchange. When the car came to rest at the little guard shack about 100 feet from where we live when we're working on the AIC campaign in D.C., the door was opened and the woman shot up, was brought out, and taken away to die. A lot of fascinating stuff going on. As soon as the for-profit media reported that a child had been in the car, police agencies began issuing statements saying, "We had no idea there was a child in the car. We didn't know there was a toddler in there. There was a toddler? Who knew? They're not us." And yet, if you watch the Al Hurrah footage, you will find a police officer staring straight into the automobile, at which point, unless the toddler was wearing one of those cloaks that the Lady of Lorien gave the hobbits, could not help but have seen the toddler in what I believe was a bright neon lime green sweater. Weird day. So it is a thorn in the porch Thursday. And I don't know what kind are there conclusions to be drawn from all of this? Is there meaning to be had out of all of this? Or is it just another paranoid day in America where we shoot first and ask questions later? And then we bring on the babbleheads onto the for-profit media to talk about how the cops needed to kill her because, you know, terrorism, Middle East, dynamite belts, women folk. And maybe my sense of sympathy is overdeveloped. But they're going to have to bring forward a whole boatload of information about just how dangerous this woman was before I see this as anything except a panicked mother trying to keep the people with the guns, the good guys with the guns, from shooting her toddler who had no gun. Maybe the woman will turn out to be some wild-eyed teabagger. I deeply suspect the same will not prove to be the case. But one never knows. Wait and see, I guess. Irish Dave noting the D.C. cops didn't have a clue, as is common. Irish Dave also pointing out that Bob, Louis the Grommet warned us about them there terror babies. I don't know. I do know that anybody who trusts the for-profit media to deliver any kind of information is throwing their trust out a great big window with a long, long fall ahead of it. But the shutdown continues. Just another day of the Republicans getting their way. Apparently the level of perspicacity with regard to this particular situation is very, very low among the people who are very well paid to deliver information on the TV. Because they keep talking about how Republicans are trying to find a way to we come in peace. When they're not. This shutdown is an absolute repig-licking wet dream that, as noted, goes back 49 years. Almost 50. And certainly goes back to Ronald Reagan declaring government is the problem. Wow. And the police officers who were injured, one wonders if treatment of their injuries will even be covered by workers' compensation, since technically they are not employed, because people who are employed are getting paid. These people are not getting paid. I don't know the answer to that, because I'm not entirely sure of the employment structure itself. But it's worth keeping an eye out for. I would be very careful if I were the people planning shutdown rallies for this coming Monday. Oh, no, maybe they've already come and gone. One of the witnesses that I saw interviewed today was at some sort of a shutdown protest on Capitol Hill when the police began telling him to run, run, run. When the police were the ones doing all the shooting. It's a nervous place. Made more so. By the present circumstance. Oh, speaking of all the things we're scared of, let's travel down to Tennessee. Bartlett, Tennessee, in particular, where they have a fall festival. Just a little chance for the community to put its best foot forward. And there was a display there from a group called Act Memphis. Act Memphis. That's part of the Act for America overarching organization. The head ACT critter would not go on and do an interview about the display that ACT Memphis had at the Bartlett Fall Festival. Their display featured images of the burning World Trade Center towers. Next, of course, and you know this, next to a picture of Barack Hussein Obama's Kenyan Muslim socialist face. Yeah. Barack Obama. Really? Barack Obama ordered those planes to be flown into the World Trade Center towers. The city of Bartlett doesn't have anything to say, and the only thing that ACT Memphis had to say was to issue a truly bizarre and achingly paranoid written response on their website, because someone was offended, as anybody with a conscience would be, by the ACT Memphis display. And they're the ones that made WMC News aware of it, to which ACT Memphis responded as follows: "It is unfortunate that a woman was offended when ACT Memphis staffed a booth at the Bartlett Festival. But we must wonder, was she offended when a Hamas intelligence officer was found living in Collierville and deported? Was she offended when the president of the Muslim Student Association at the University of Memphis declared the MSA was a regular donor to the Holy Land Foundation, which was convicted in a federal trial in Dallas, Texas, of funding a terrorist organization? Was she offended when federal agents raided the Memphis home of a Syrian citizen and found a photograph of him shouldering a rocket-powered grenade launcher in Bosnia while standing next to an associate of Osama bin Laden? Is she offended that the mortgage of a Memphis mosque is held by a front organization of the Iranian government that had its assets seized by the federal government? And it goes on like that. And then it ends. Yes, it seems the lady has many events to be offended about, but exposing the truth is not one of them." These are some real weirdos. They are featuring, among other things, a lecture in Bartlett, Tennessee, by conservative Christian lawyer and author of God's Law, the Only Political Solution, Arkansas State Representative, State of Arkansas Office of Chief Counsel, Business Law Professor, Research Biologist, Chemistry, Physics, and Biology Teacher, Veteran U.S. Coast Guard Truck Driver, Landscape Laborer, Charles R. Fuqua, J.D. Oh, God. How can a nation long continue that is so pants-wettingly terrified? I mean, afraid of everything. Just everything. And for whom the only solution is to shoot first and ask questions later. Jim letting me know that FEHB benefits are still in effect. Federal employee health benefits. I hope they are. Because the last thing that a person injured in the line of duty needs is to find out that he's not covered by his workers' compensation. What a mess. What a mess our paranoia gets us into. What a horrible, horrible mess. But under those circumstances, well, wait a minute. Oh, by the way, you do know that that tropical storm and hurricane warnings have been posted for the Gulf Coast, right? There's only one problem. A lot of the agencies that would respond to a hurricane, yeah, they're kind of shut down right now. Tropical Storm Karen is out there. It has formed off the coast, off the northern tip of the Yucatan Peninsula, and is basically projected to take the same path that Mayan peoples did many, many, many centuries, if not millennia ago, to get to Mobile Bay. Because it's forecast to come ashore over Mobile Bay somewhere around 7 o'clock Sunday morning. And we don't know whether it'll be a tropical storm or a hurricane, but the warnings extend from the eastern projection of Louisiana across the entirety of the boot heel of Mississippi Stan, and all over all of South Alabama Stan, as we like to call it, L.A., Lower Alabama, and the western panhandle of Florida Stan. Right now they're saying it could be expected to have sustained winds between 30 and 73 miles per hour. Louisiana Governor Piyush Jindal has declared a state of emergency already. It is expected that Karen could reach hurricane strength by early on Saturday. Winds today have hit the 65-mile-an-hour mark, making it an official tropical storm. The hurricane watch for the Gulf Coast goes from Grand Island, Louisiana, to Indian Pass, Florida. The National Hurricane Center is partially shut down. If you go to the National Hurricane Center website, you'll see a message saying, due to the federal government shutdown, NOAA.gov and most associated websites are unavailable. However, because the information the site provides is necessary to protect life and property, it will be updated and maintained during the federal government shutdown. The people who are monitoring Tropical Storm Karen are doing so, I remind myself and all of us, without being paid. They are engaged in involuntary servitude, contrary to the 13th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. the chances are about 28% that the storm will be a hurricane as of Saturday morning. By the way, going back to the incident in D.C. today, I do find it interesting that a couple of days ago, tail gunner Ted Cruz declared that the government shutdown that he wanted might lead to a terrorist attack by the against the United States. Oh, for heaven's sakes. So I guess that's about as much as, well, we'll close out the filibobster. And go to the front porch portion of the program in short order. We are still trying to keep up with funding here. And thus far, not so much. Fritz writes in, I saw the Facebook post from our ABC affiliate in Central Arkansas about the D.C. shooting incident. Well, out of the gate, so to speak, a paranoid Obamaphobe. Oh, this I gotta see. Thanks, Fritz. KATV Channel 7 posted, breaking, according to ABC News, three senators say they heard what sounded like gunfire on Capitol Hill. According to the Associated Press, the U.S. Capitol is currently on lockdown, one police officer injured. Can't be. Guns aren't allowed in D.C. And then this. Praying big time. They need to get Obama out of there and get on with our government the way it should be, without Obama and Obamacare. Oh, for the love of God. And it was like that. There was more of the same. Hey, how about a little happy something before we do go to the break and go to the front porch? Because I like a little good news. And this is really happy news. This is the story of a teenager it's the story of a teenager who came out. When the teenager came out of the closet, his mother kicked him out of the house. The boy's name is Chad. The mother's name is Christine. Christine's daddy wrote to Christine. Dear Christine, I'm disappointed in you as a daughter. You're correct that we have a shame in the family. That's what she called her son, Chad, a shame in the family. You're correct that we have a shame in the family, but mistaken about what it is. Kicking Chad out of your home simply because he told you he was gay is the real abomination here. I guess we can guess what kind of mindset Christine has that she's trotting out the word abomination. Kicking Chad out of your home simply because he told you he was gay is the real abomination here. A parent disavowing A parent disowning a child is what goes against nature. The only intelligent thing I heard you saying in all this was you didn't raise your son to be gay. Of course you didn't. He was born this way and didn't choose it any more than he being left-handed. You, however, have made a choice of being hurtful, narrow-minded, and backward. So, while we are in the business of disowning our children, I think I'll take this moment to say goodbye to you. I now have a fabulous, as the gays put it, grandson to raise. And I don't have time for a heartless B-word of a daughter. If you find your heart, give us a call. Signed, Dad. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. There'll be some sadness in that family, but the next generation, the most recent generation, is going to be the better for it. The grandfather loves his grandson more than the mother loves her son. Note coming in from Beth in Texas, subject line, Lily White Psychosis. Your filibuster on today's D.C. atrocity strikes a deep chord with me. Though I'm less pale than you are by only a couple of shades, I've been marinated in Latino culture since I married a Mexico City boy in 1969. Many of the people who populate my daily life have Mexican or Central American origins, and I speak Spanish every day. As such cultural immersion will do, my own has colored the way I see almost everything. Today I had lunch with my friend Billy, a more authentic Mexican-American. Our talk turned to the subject of mind-bending ferociousness, in this case the psychopathological machinations of the Texas GOP. And Billy shook her head and asked, "Aren't you glad you're not white?" Beth says, "I'm more than glad. At times like these, I'm downright thankful." And I understand that. Because these seem to be very, very white problems. White folks worried about Muslims in Tennessee. White folks worried about Hindus who aren't Hindus but are actually Sikhs in California. White folks beating up Sikh professors in New York City. Upstanding, God-fearing white cops rousting a Sikh driver in Mississippi. And the list is damned near endless. White folks trying to blow up a mountain range in Wisconsin and ruin the way of life lives for some, you know, people whose genetic forebears have been here for, I don't know, 15,000 years? Gut-bending psychosis, gut-bending ferociousness. It's all right there. So we'll take a break, and we will come back to Friday on the Front Porch. This is The Horn, listener-supported conversation radio, and I really appreciate our ability to do those conversations on days like this. Third day of October, 2013, and we'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Squalls out on the Gulf Stream, big storm coming soon. I passed out in my hammock and got a slip to way past noon. Stood up and tried to focus. I hoped I wouldn't have to look far. I knew I could use a Bloody Mary, so I stumble next door to the bar. And now I must confess, I could use some rest. I can't run at this pace very long. Yes, it's quite insane. I think it hurts my brain, but it cleans me out, then I can go on. There's something about this Sunday, it's the most peculiar grave. Strolling down the avenue that's known as 818, feeling tired, then I got inspired. I knew that it wouldn't last long. So all alone I walked back home, sat on my beach, and then I made up this song. And now I must confess, I could use some rest. I can't run at this pace very long. Yes, it's quite insane. I think it hurts my brain, but then caps on the ocean, and I'm watching for water spouts. It's time to close the shutters, it's time to go inside. In a week I'll be in Gay Perry, that's a mighty long airplane ride. And now I'm
nice little ditty for a Thursday evening. Jimmy Buffet, all the way back to the A1A album, Trying to Reason with the Hurricane Season. And I like the reference in there to hammocks, too. So, yeah, that's nice. This is Thorn in the Front Porch Thursday. Yeah, I know. But we're gonna fire up the front porch. Got three folks, Sergi and Duncan and Grant, who have wandered up on the Skype line. Hi, guys.
Hey, Bob.
Hello, Bob.
How y'all are?
Doing well.
Just fine, staying out of the wind.
Hot.
Okay, let's see who we've got on the phone lines here. Hey, who've I got?
No fool like an old fool, Bob.
Hey, Bill, what's happening? All right, and the other line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Jim.
Hey, Jim.
In Louisiana, Stan.
Down there doing your own version of trying to reason with the hurricane season.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So what's the story? Is that kind of headed pretty much toward us, or is it off more to the left? You know, Alabama, Mississippi, or what's up? You don't know?
Yeah, I mean, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, little chunk of Georgia.
They've all issued weather alerts, as far as I know.
Yeah, it's all there under a hurricane watch right now. From Grand Isle to, I forget where it said, Florida.
You know what we need? We need more of that life-giving CO2.
Yeah, why not?
I heard
it's plant food.
I couldn't believe it.
It's got what plants crave, right?
That's right.
Who was that guy that said it was? I know that I just used that line, but I forget the dude who said that, the right wing wacko who said that.
That's
plant food.
Well, two people said that. Lamar Smith of Texas said that. And one L. Michelle Bachman said CO2 is good because it's natural and it's in our soda pop.
Oh, did she really say that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's good because it's natural. Oh, no. Well, I guess since arsenic is natural.
And cyanide and, right, yeah, exactly.
What are you guys worried about? You know, God tells you it's natural, then don't worry about it. No.
Well, chicken pox are natural. What, don't discover a cure for it? There's a lot of things that are natural.
Exactly, exactly.
I'm just being sarcastic.
With all my references to our national paranoia, Bill, I got your note here. Paranoia strikes deep.
Yeah, for what it's worth, buddy.
Yeah, indeed. Let's see, one more person on the phone lines, and then we got one more opening after that. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, what's happening, Kevin?
Not much. That Indian Pass, Florida, my parents and my cousin from Georgia were supposed to meet up there this weekend for kind of a family get-together. And, of course, it being October, we don't see too many hurricanes in October. But, I guess it could be possibly maybe sort of that global warming thing, you know, to see a hurricane in the middle of October.
Not the middle, but you know what I'm saying.
Even in October, this time of year, you know, we don't see them very often. And if we do, they're usually in the Atlantic heading northward. So, you know.
Yeah, this one formed up right there off the tip of the Yucatan Peninsula.
Yeah, and you know, I used to get the updates. Granted, I'm here in Colorado and don't have much use for them other than family in Florida and Georgia, but... I used to get the updates from the NHC, and when the sequester happened, those went away. And, of course, like you're saying, now the NHC website supposedly is going to be updated and maintained by unpaid workers. So, you know, I'm wondering if I call tonight if they even know they're under a hurricane watch up there.
Well, I mean, they've got a skeleton crew running it, and they've been flying, you know, doing some hurricane. They kind of found this thing, if I read it correctly, they kind of found this thing by accident. Just kind of cruising around the Gulf of Mexico with their meteorological instruments aboard the airplane and looked in the, wait a minute, what the hell is this?
My mom and dad had been telling me about a system south of Florida for, last week or so, and I kept saying... Well, I've heard of one like near Jamaica, but I didn't hear of anything in the southern Gulf of Mexico by the Yucatan Peninsula, and they kept saying, yeah, there's one out there, and they're talking about it heading north. And I'm like, well, I haven't heard of anything about it, and the reason I haven't is because skeleton crews don't have a lot of time for extraneous stuff, and if the system's no threat to America just yet, you know, I can see where they wouldn't have... posted an update or sent out.
And this stuff, Kevin, is happening all over the federal government. I saw a tweet from NASA.
Yep.
Because they maintain tweets of stuff that's coming back from Voyager 2.
Yep.
Out there waiting to be turned into V'ger, I guess, and Perseus Kambata floating around somewhere in space. But that was a joke. But the tweet said something like, due to federal government shutdown, nothing more from this feed. As we head out of the solar system, good luck, humans. Figure it out on your own.
Yep. And President Obama, I know in the address he said yesterday, NASA's almost entirely closed.
Yeah.
So, you know, one good thing that happened today, though, Bob. I got my Social Security check, and I
Hey, stand by a minute, guys. I've got to change out my headset here, and I can't hear you right now. Having some technical difficulties.
Can we talk among ourselves?
Yeah, let's talk among ourselves.
We can talk about Bob while he's
right
with
us.
Yeah, we can't hear you. Yeah,
I think Bob's one hell of a broadcaster, personally. There's only one. He and Mike Malloy, they're neck and neck for me for the best broadcaster in my existence.
I tell you though. After listening to Bob, I find it hard to do another 3 hours of Malloy because it's,
it's so
much information.
It's the old story. You can only take so much of the truth. And then you start looking for the Bible, you know, to help you work with the depression, you know.
Yeah, it depends on the story with Malloy.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, hell, I do the 3 hours here, and then I go listen. Of course, I've got... I mean, you want to have a really rollicking good time. Put Malloy on one computer and Rick Smith on the other. You don't know which computer to scream at that point.
Yeah, Rick Smith is good. I mean, I just tell. It's like I say, it's only 24 hours in a day. I listen to you for 3 hours. I listen to Malloy for 3 hours. That's one quarter of my day, and I'm not even throwing in sleep time. Or my slave job time,
yeah.
Bob, I've got one more quick update for you all. Today I was on a PFAW, People for the American Way, teleconference about the Supreme Court term. Did anybody know about that, or was anybody on that call too?
No, I wasn't.
Well, they talked about the Supreme Court, the things that are coming up. And it wasn't a very cheery conversation because...
Oh, no, there's some really ugly stuff out there.
Yes, yes.
You know what would be really cool, though? If, like, a couple of these conservative justices appointed by the Republicans, the Republicans, or whatever you want to... just died. And I'm not threatening to kill them or anything, but I'm just getting tired of these idiots, and I just wish they would die. Natural.
That's the whole problem.
Their sky spook would call them home. So they could spend eternity in heaven talking to the same people they knew forever.
Well, that lifetime in action was one of the worst things that was written into the Constitution, without a doubt. Can't get rid of them.
Nope. And when you consider that there's five of them now that are hard right, granted, can't think of his name now, the one that approved the ACA. What's his name, Bob?
Wait, what, Kennedy? Or? Well, I mean, Roberts.
Yeah, Roberts wrote
yeah,
the
yeah,
opinion.
Yeah, Robert, dead-eyed John Roberts wrote the opinion.
Yeah. What they were saying is when... Sandra Day O'Connor, and she was no liberal, when she got off the bench and was replaced by Alito, that's when the problem really started, because O'Connor had a conscience. She would side with the liberal opinion when it came to matters of fairness, such as, you know, equal opportunity and things like that.
See, Kevin, all the shine went off Sandra Day O'Connor for me. Back in the year 2000.
With?
Bush v. Gore.
Yeah.
She knew what the right thing to do was, but still she did the political thing.
Yep.
And I think that should be put, you know, when she finally shuffles off this mortal coil and goes to her long home, I think it should be put on her stone. This is the human being who gave us the presidency of George W. Bush. This is the human being who made it possible for George W. Bush to cause the deaths of over a million Iraqi civilians. This is the person who made it possible for 5,000 U.S. servicemen and women to die in meaningless, stupid, damned wars in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yep.
Here lies Sandra Day O'Connor.
the wars weren't meaningless. Wall Street
made a fortune.
Military industrial complex made a fortune. And that's the only thing that really matters, as all of us know.
Amen.
Being sarcastic in case you can't detect that.
It's very much the truth. The only thing that matters to the upper class, the upper crust, and this top upper crust is how much more they can steal.
You know, Bob, hi.
Oh, hey, Larry.
Hey, hi there. You know, I was just thinking, as I was going to see my shrink, who I'm not seeing today, that the whole Congress needs to be psychoanalyzed. The Congress and the people in this country, because we've been brainwashed by a kind of ideology, the psychology, you know, how we practice psychology and how we look at sociology too, is largely cockeyed and back-ass word or whatever, ass back or whatever. And it seems like what they need to do is they need to get a mediator, like what they would call a parliamentarian, or somebody to negotiate between these members of Congress, not the members of Congress themselves, somebody impartial, and then have a psychiatrist come in and really diagnose what the problems are. And until you have that, you're going to have a dysfunctional Congress. It's the same thing that happens at these community radio stations, such as at Pacifica Radio and at community radio stations where they have, you know, where they, you know, and some of them have great programming, as you know, but they can't get together and they can't manage anything. So it's sort of funny, but I'm really not making a joke. I really think the Congress and the whole political structure and all of our institutions have to be psychoanalyzed, or we need to have some kind of sociological, therapeutical, you know, therapeutic way of fixing this stuff. Things aren't going to get any better until we do. Do you have any suggestions? Does anybody on the call have any suggestions about what we might be able to do to facilitate that situation?
Yeah, I got one. Revert back to Ramon. Psychotherapy.
Ramon's fan. That's always nice.
Well, I'm not a big believer. I was spent 10 years married to a woman who was a psych nurse, and some of the stories she told me about a lady shrink who was from overseas, and she came in to the office one morning and says, "Oh, this is so and so is having a bad day." And my wife says, "What's wrong?" And the shrink says, "Well, when I talked to her, I said she couldn't hear me because she didn't have her glasses. Then she offered me a cigarette made out of lettuce leaves." And this, here's this woman from overseas. She didn't know anything about hearing aids being built into glasses or the cigarettes that were on the market for a while that were lettuce leaves. I'm not really impressed. My second wife had a master's in psychology, and I think she was nuttier than a fruitcake. But because I've seen enough of these people, but not, I don't buy a lot of stuff that I hear from professionals in different fields. I sometimes wonder about them.
Well, but I think the larger question that Larry is asking is, what is the solution to this profound and deep dysfunction that our government has fallen into?
Well, Bob, if I knew that, do you think I'd be sitting here talking on the phone?
That's the sixth sense of humor popping.
I understand. The problem is, though, is that a group like this and groups similar all over the country can come up with some pretty reasonable solutions. But this country is past reasonableness.
I've seen a time when a Republican who headed the Supreme Court was opening up doors all over the place. Wasn't it Earl Warren?
Yeah.
And what did the right wing want to do with Warren?
The charge to impeach Warren was led by a Michigan congressman by the name of Gerald Ford.
Oh yes. Oh, didn't I've heard that name before? Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm sorry, Larry.
Warren.
Mild-mannered Gerald Ford from Grand Rapids, Michigan. That Gerald Ford?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Was calling for the impeachment of Earl Warren.
Well, do you want to inform people about the religious part of this, aspect of that part of Michigan?
No. I mean, you do it, Bill.
That's Reformed Church. I had an uncle from there, and this guy, I remember when I was a kid, him and the other old folks sitting around talking about Roosevelt. And he's the one who used that pronunciation. When I heard that pronunciation in later life, I knew right away what I was talking to. When they pronounced Roosevelt, the next thing, they replaced the R with a J and used that one. And this was the right wing of the 1950s and 60s. And we had a few in the family, and you didn't see them that often because after a while, nobody invited them to anything, but that was another story.
Well, the question is, how is it that a Republican like a Richard Nixon or even a Goldwater could sound absolutely sane right now at this particular time in our history, whereas back at the time that they were actually, you know, in office, they were seen as, you know, evil incarnate.
But Larry, that's the thing. They wouldn't be seen as sane today. The Goldwater Republicans are the grandparents of this madness now. And I think that goes to my thesis that I've been enunciating for the past two or three nights, namely that if we see this as some sort of dysfunction in government, we're already lit. Because this is not this is, the Republican Party and the teabaggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters are all getting in this exactly what they want. This is what the stuff is out there all over the place. You've got all kinds of teabagger types saying, "See, we're getting along just fine without government. We didn't need it in the first place." And this is a transgenerational theme inside the party. It has been their goal to do this to the government. And even though Grover Norquist came out and criticized Tail Gunner Ted Cruz for his shenanigans in the Senate, the fact of the matter is, it was Grover Norquist who was hollering, "Drown the government in the bathtub," even as the waters were rising in the lower Ninth Ward of New Orleans.
Well, something tells me that we don't need to get off on a Goldwater tangent, but something tells me that if he were alive today, he would say, "You know, you idiots have perverted everything that I meant when I was talking about integrity in government." Now, he's the one that said extremism in the name of liberty is no vice. Well, I don't agree with that, but I think he'd be turning over in his grave or his bones or his.
Well, John Dean has made similar assertions, but I don't know if it's in. This is the logical extension of a generation or two's worth of that kind of thinking. It is devolution. It's devolutionary in its nature.
Amen.
The stuff that Barry Goldwater was talking about is ultimately what these people are getting as their way right now.
Yeah, with the Cokes on top of it.
Yeah, remember, I mean, the Coke, Pappy Coke was behind the origins of the John Birch Society, which was out there hammering tongs behind Barry Goldwater. Well, at least the ones who didn't think Goldwater was a commie, too. Everybody but the Birch Society was a commie to the Birch Society.
That's true. That's exactly right. What they used to say is they would want to have proof that somebody wasn't a communist. They would assume that they were communists to begin with. So, you know, and that's the way that this government operates. People say, "Hey, I don't want to have somebody snooping around in my life." And then the government says, "Well, you know, we're going to assume that you are, and if you haven't done anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about." Well, I don't like that whole logic I don't like it. Okay, so that's...
You hear that from a lot of these phone callers on the right that they're lucky they can spell M-E-N and find the right restroom, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're really not very bright.
Oh, it's like they even have, like, the quote-unquote paid callers come in. And, I catch a lot of quote-unquote left leaning radio as much as I can, because I'm not going to try and listen to the other side, cause that's useless. But even then, on some of the other shows, they'll try and call in, and they'll try and, you know, and even once they present their idiotic argument to whatever, and he says, well, the host will ask, basically, what's your political persuasion? And, you know, I'm an independent, which is like, you know, I'm a Republican trying to get in. Whereas, like, if you or I or any of us, four or five, six people on the phone would try to call in on their show, on one of their right-wing shows, which would be a total waste of time, but even if we were, we wouldn't even get through the screener, or we'd be cut off ASAP, right?
Yeah, if you open your mouth in honesty, yeah, they won't talk to you.
Well, how long do you think we're going to have to put up with the shenanigans with this government while they're holding us hostage? And I blame Democrats in this, because the Democrats haven't stood up for anything while they've been in.
We got this because they caved earlier.
Yep.
Okay, I mean that's a fact. But how long is it? But the other question, Larry, that you ask is how long is this going to go on? My answer is indefinitely.
Yep.
Well, I don't know how we're going to be able to live with it as a people in this country if it keeps on going on.
Well, who do you mean people? Because see, Larry, you gotta get it all the way down to your toenails. That there are a lot of people in this country that the teabaggers and the repig lickens and the birthers, deathers, tenthers, and assorted other booger eaters don't think are actually people. People of color are not really people. People of limited financial resources are not really people. People who receive any form of Social Security, whether it be old age Social Security, Social Security disability, SSI, are not really people. People who get food stamps are not really people. Women and infants and children who get WIC benefits are not really people. People who are on the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program are not really people. Anyone who didn't vote for Willard Romney is not really people. So that's a whole lot of people that the Republican Party would be absolutely thrilled if they would just go and die.
That's what they want, but then I don't see a lot of us getting together, because the only way it seems that we're going to get really a real massive change in this country is for the millions of us who are pissed off and angry at what the teabaggers are doing, if we all decided that we were not going to let business continue as usual. And like you were talking about either yesterday or on Tuesday, we were talking about a general strike where one group goes out on strike and they all decide, you know, to support each other. And we go out in a general strike, but then you've got a situation where the government calls out the police and then they start beating people up. And then the general strike ends after 7 days or 14 days or whatever it ends. And we're right back to square one. It's going to have to be a real sustained general strike. And I'm physically not able. I mean, I can use my mouth to say all this stuff. But in terms of whether or not I'm able to physically join into that, or whether I'm willing to go out there and risk getting my head beaten in or get thrown in jail for it, I don't know whether, you know, Bob, you know where I'm coming from. You know
yeah,
what
I
I'm
do.
Saying.
But let me propose something that may seem completely ludicrous, but might actually make a little bit more sense, because I've come to have a rather jaundiced view of protest actions, okay? Unless there's something like Occupy, but so different from Occupy as to be nothing like Occupy. What I mean is, if you show up on protest on Saturday and you're gone on Sunday, then it's business as usual in Washington, D.C. or any other state capital or anywhere else on Monday, okay?
And then they say, oh, look, this is democracy in action. They had the right to protest. Isn't democracy great?
And now we can go back to ignoring them.
Yeah.
Go back to corporate media.
So is there a viable solution? Well, here's one. And it's out there enough to be quite loopy, really. But here's one. Now, you've got a lot of good liberals, progressives, whatever, living in safe districts, right?
Yes, like mine.
What happens if a lot of people from the Bay Area, for instance, move into Louis Gohmert's district in the 1st District of Texas and just vote his ass out?
Why would you want to move to his district to begin with?
Well, like Jim, because Larry's asking a question about how we get rid of these fifth columnists who are inside the government of the United States. If you really want to get rid of them, there are
6 months or a couple of months to
long enough to establish residency.
Well, then the people down there would say that we were a bunch of carpetbaggers from California, and they'd do an insert. You know, they'd start. You know, they'd start coming after. Well, I know that's a stereotype, but you get the general.
But I mean, you're asking a serious question, and I'm trying to give a serious answer because the only way that there's any meaningful change beyond that is to wait until the election of November 2022.
Okay.
Now, in the election of November, I will be 59 years old by then.
Yes.
Okay. That's a long damn time to wait to say, and there may not be, and frankly, by November 2022, depending on how the gerrymandering goes, depending on who's in control of which state legislatures, there may not even be any relief then. And the question becomes one of how much more harm can these thugs, and they are thugs, they're reactionaries, they're running a junta, they're creating a coup d'etat. How much more damage can they do? They are doing tremendous damage day by day. I mean, this shutdown, not anything but the shutdown itself, is costing millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars per day, and it was brought about by a government by a political party that says they're worried about debt.
And they were able to do this by using the so-called democratic process, which says that the means justify the end, and they've been able to use the means, and they've been able to edge the country not so slowly over to an extreme position. But then everybody else in the society, including the Democrats, said, well, they created this by using democratic means, so as long as the people want it, and as long as the people speak for it, as crazy as it may be, as long as they were able to arrive at this extremist political situation by using the democratic means to get there, it's perfectly okay. I'm sorry.
That's
it. Hey, Larry, there's a gang of three from California that used to do this shit in the state.
Duncan, please let me know.
Congressman McCarthy, McClintock, and my Congressman LaMalfa, they were all part of the California legislature during those periods of budget meltdown and gamesmanship. California has exported a lot of ideas over the years, some good, some bad. Now it appears the House GOP has imported the hostage-taking tactics that contributed to California's past fiscal gridlock.
Thank you, Duncan. That's LaMalfa and McClintock and...
McCarthy.
McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy you're talking about.
Yeah, I think that's who it is.
Yes.
I think they're all in that gang of 20.
We're not talking about 30. The actor here. We're talking about the politician. Yeah. Doug LaMalfa. I remember Doug LaMalfa. McClintock was he transported himself from the northern San Fernando Valley, Northridge area, Northridge up to your area. He moved.
Well, he's not up here. LaMalfa's from my area. He's a rice farmer.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest subsidy. Farm subsidy guys in the Congress.
He has money in
his office. He's received over almost $5 million in subsidies.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to be so angry, but I guess I'm...
And there was a protest in front of his office in Redding today, but it was like a counter-protest thing, but the teabaggers threw up, so some of these things could get ugly.
Oh, yes, they can.
Yeah.
You know, I was there in the 1960s in the anti-war thing, and I could take so much crap from these people, and then a few of us would just try to get them out of sight somewhere and punch them out, and that was that. Because they didn't want to understand anything else.
We have a lot of people that move from the Bay Area in Southern California up here.
Yeah, I'd like to ask Sergi, I don't know if he's here, but I'd like to ask Sergi how people in his area would feel about a bunch of, an overwhelming amount of, because I know that there are progressives in Texas, there are a lot of them, but they're spread out, as Sergi has said. You've got pockets of them in overwhelmingly Republican districts. But I'd like to know what he might say about a whole bunch of progressives from the Bay Area just coming down into his area and just starting to vote progressive, how he would respond to that.
He's away right now. He'd be right back.
Okay.
In a way, that would be cool, but then just like you got to live in an area, expert on voter registration, but you have to live in an area for a while. Then that takes money just to live there, and you can't just, not everybody's able to transport their job, you know, whatever they do to eke out an existence, which, is a very important thing.
All right, we just lost Sergi. I just heard him, I don't know where, all I see on my screen, I see you, Bob, and then I see...
Grant's still on.
Grant, and then I see
right.
I see Dunk.
Yeah.
Grant, Dunk, and you, and that's who I see.
And then you got the phone lines.
Okay.
The cheapskate. Well, in my case, the guys with the bad eyes, you're going to go so much with computers, you know?
Yeah.
You only got three callers, right? You got another line open, Bob.
Yeah, there is one more phone line open.
I just wanted to make sure.
Well, see, the real problem with me is you go back and read some 1950s history, post-war, and you'll see these names popping up. Same bunch of Robert Taft, Senator of Ohio, as right-wing as can be, but he looks like he at least in outward deportment looked like a gentleman.
Now, this was the guy that did the Taft-Hartley Act, is that right?
Yes, sir. He was the son of William Howard Taft.
Yeah, he's
the guy that was supposed to get the Republican nomination in 52, and which would have put Stevenson in office, probably.
So, I'm going to be polite and say, is he the one that cut the guts out of the... out of the labor.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's why we don't have things like general strikes in the United States.
Yep.
He knew exactly what he was doing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he knew exactly what he was doing. Well, how come we couldn't figure it out? Or, well, I wasn't.
Well, no, it was figured out. Labor knew what he was doing as he was doing it, but there was a Republican president and a Republican Congress, and there was no damn stopping him.
Well, the people in
not only that, a lot of people who work for a living.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking them per se, but they're not too politically savvy. They just kind of, this has been my experience since electing, electing Reagan, and he was anybody but a workers president, and then Bush won, and then the Roman continue thing we were talking about a week or two ago about how the empire continues on through different people. You know what I mean, Bob?
Yep, I do.
In the same family.
Well, I talked about the military industrial complex, and he wasn't just running his mouth. Ike was elected, believe me, by the guys who...
Oh, I know. Ike did that.
Who fought under, and thought he was... he didn't know what he was. He didn't know what party he belonged to.
Well, he kind of went for, from what I understand, he went for the Republican. He went for the Republican Party to kind of give America a two-party system.
Yeah.
And If there was an afterlife, I'm sure he's twisting and turning around in his grave.
Well, I used to argue with a lot of truck drivers on a show that comes out of Cincinnati about the fellas and telling them, you know, if it wasn't for FDR, you wouldn't... ask your grandmother when she got electricity. Down in the... You know, Bob, you know what I'm saying. The hills and hollers where our commercial company didn't look at it as a profitable venture.
Well, look, this house that I'm in now was originally wired for DC.
Oh, my.
Because it ran on Delco batteries.
Mm-hmm.
You got a lot of knob and tube in that house?
Not anymore.
Oh, okay.
Good.
Bob, you mentioned you were affected by that derecho. I think that's what you called it, a derecho. And you mentioned how all your appliances blew out because of that. That really upset me. That, you know, that must have set you back a lot of money.
No, it hasn't set us back any money at all yet because we didn't have the money to replace anything.
Okay. Well, you know, if you have insurance for it, I guess...
No, there was no insurance. They won't... there's no company that will write insurance on a ramshackle place like this.
Well,
the insurance company's crooks, too.
Wait, let me get this straight. An insurance company won't write insurance on a proposition where they're almost sure to making money? I find that so hard to believe.
No, they're almost guaranteed to lose it. Hey, we got some background noise going on, some snapping.
Yeah, that's me. I'll stop.
Okay.
I'll mute. I'll go over here and mute. All right?
Okay.
Okay. I'll do that. Sorry about that.
No worries.
You know,
I just wasn't thinking.
When I talk to
people, which happens a lot, don't worry.
When I talk to people about national health care, they start blah blah blah. Insurance companies are better. I said, wait a minute. I remember when you wrecked your car, or when somebody else wrecked it for you. And I remember what you felt about insurance companies then. I said, this is the same freaking mindset, you dummy. I mean, it's just because they're insuring your health, they can steal more than the guy insuring your car.
You know, you're so right. And not only that, even when you have a valid claim, the first thing you get in the goddamn MFing mail is something... we need more information. It's un-freaking believable that people are willing to go with insurance companies, quote, against the quote-unquote government, to me. I mean, the government has its bad things, but insurance companies? Corporations? Are you willing?
They haven't.
Am I getting outraged enough? Yeah, you understand?
I do. I absolutely do.
I don't know how much, believe me, I'm an old fart, and, you know, and I've been through, I mean, you talk about anti-war demonstrations. Yeah, a lot of the folks there were sincere. But a lot of guys were there because there were some pretty young women there.
Yeah, to get laid.
I hate to say that, but it just...
I kind of wish I was there then.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. It was, we had a lot less diseases to worry about in those days. Thank you. You know, it's pretty miserable today. I quit that stuff when I hit my second marriage because my first wife had been an RN for years, and she started informing me about this illness that was coming out of the woodwork, and I said, thank you very much. That's the end of that. It was a time. I mean, it was. I tell people it was like a damn merry-go-round living then. It was amazing. I'm glad I was there. I wish I'd be around longer, only so I could see these bastards get what's coming to them, but I don't think we're going to see it. It bothers me. It scares me. It frustrates me. And like what did I tell you, Bob, when I said I'm just too old to grab a rifle anymore or do anything, you know? Because these people frustrate you to the point... I mean, you know, I've been a Civil War buff for years, and that bunch that started that mess... just drive me to the brink. Because how many poor men, about 600 million casualties?
Yeah.
Yep. When the population was 30?
Right. All right.
Hey, I don't want to end the conversation. I don't want to be the talker here, but I just have to say that what we're seeing now is what we were afraid of in the 60s and what we thought we beat. How wrong we were.
Well, who said the price of liberty is eternal vigilance?
Yes.
Yes.
Was that Franklin, or who said that? I don't. Don't tell me it was. Who did?
Bob, I got to tell you, I'm in a class. I'm taking Native American history.
Excellent.
Very interesting, and we're at the period of Andrew Jackson.
Beautiful.
And that particular person did more at that particular time to hurt the Native Americans than, you know, because they relocated, you know, and there were all kinds of corrupt things to steal the land from Native Americans at that point. But I wanted to ask Bill, you were talking about that we should look back in the history of the 1950s here in America and that crowd of people. So I was looking in my books and I found, a book that would, you know, go back and I'll read about the 50s. The 40s and the 50s.
So that's the noise. You were digging around your library there.
That's right.
One good social history, for the social aspect of it, both political and anything from television to fast food, is David Halberstam's The 50s. It's more sociology, because it covers politics. He devotes two chapters to Martin Luther King and the revolution in against segregation and a bigotry that was so, it's still not really nice now, but it was really sick then. It was just crazy then.
What's the book called?
The 50s. David Halberstam. Can you help me with the spelling on that, Bob?
Halberstam? H-A-L-B-E-R-S-T-A-M.
Yeah, there's a lot of social history, anything from the early television shows for instance, Fred Allen was a great radio comic. So he moves to TV, and he didn't do very well. And Fred Allen's comment on television, it was, for some people with nothing to do, they watch people who can do nothing. And he was a sarcastic guy, but he's right on the money. Television today, I don't know, all these multiple channels, and I keep scratching my head and saying, well, what do I learn here? Well, I enjoy the Alligator Hunters because I get a kick out of the Cajun American. Is a crazy language. And then you ask people, where are the Cajuns? Who are they? Where did a lot of them come from? And they look at you like, what? Well, Bob, can you explain where they came from? A lot of them?
It's a process of migration from the driving out of the French population in Canada, following the British.
The Acadians.
Yeah, the Acadians.
Yeah,
well, this is Jim, and I'm from Louisiana, and Bob is exactly right.
Evangeline and all of that.
Yeah.
It's basically some sort of, believe it or not, Bob, some sort of religious BS to a great extent. Imagine that, right?
Right.
From what I remember from, they used to teach history when I was
a buddy of mine who teaches it now.
In high school.
My buddy says that they've cropped it. He's retired now, and he taught. Who's the guy who was our representative from Lake County around here? The guy that quit the house, Bob. You know his name. He walked out of the house and he quit. He was a prosecutor in Lake County when I first heard of him, and he couldn't take it, and he just retired because he was not tied to, but he had worked with a lot of organized labor in northeastern Ohio. There was a lot of it still here. And again, he was like I hear a lot of my friends say, well, my family were Eisenhower Republicans. Because the damn party has moved so far to the right, and Bob, last night's show hits it right on the head week after week. Pass that money around. Pass that collection basket.
Bill, go on.
No, that's all right. I was raised Roman Catholic to the point of a choir and altar boy, and the only good thing I can say about it is at least our priests, like my dad used to tell me about a buddy of his who was a priest, and my dad was a pro musician, and he'd go play an Erie PA, and during the week this priest would show up in a suit and tie, and hook up with some good-looking young women, and away they go. Okay, good.
Bob, sorry.
No, that's it.
Okay. Well, when I was raised, basically kind of, I mean, my mom would drag us to church once in a while. My dad, I found out later, was basically an atheist. And I'm basically just an atheist because, I mean, when I was like 18, 17, 18, 19, I asked him, Dad, what do you think happens when you die?
And yeah, I quit it in high school. Said, I gave it up, you know.
He just said, nothing, you're dead. Yeah. You know? So, and he didn't preach to me, didn't proselytize to me that I had to believe that. And, I just, and actually in a realistic way, and I just saw a show on TV today, earlier, some scientific show about the universe. It kind of reconfirms my belief that when this life is over, it's over. Yeah, and, you know, be thankful, but be thankful. Accept the moments of being that you had to have.
Well, I found that the best inoculation against that kind of stuff is to actually tell children stories out of the Bible. You know, like, I'll never forget the time when I explained to my children the story of how Abraham went down and pimped his own wife to Pharaoh. And they're like, what? Oh, yeah. I mean, it's right there in black and white. Abraham goes down into the land of Egypt and pimps his wife Sarah to Pharaoh in order to gain favor and money and riches and stuff with Pharaoh, and Pharaoh believes that, you know, Abraham says, no, this is my sister, and proceeds to get a thing going with her. And then, of course, the juvenile delinquent in the sky drops a plague on Pharaoh, and one of his priests comes along and says, Pharaoh, God on earth, yeah, that's not his sister. That's his wife. And Pharaoh says, what? And, you know, you tell children about the night that, what was it, Lot's children got Lot all liquored up and committed incest with him?
Yeah.
And, the story of the white hot rage that Saul goes into because of the friendship between David and Jonathan?
Yep.
You know, the very
friendship.
Special friendship. You know, like longtime companion, that kind of thing. And you know, all of a sudden, you know, your kids will look at you and go, that's just a bunch of crazy shit, isn't it? Only by at that point in time, they weren't allowed to use those words. And you go, yes, it is. And anybody who believes that, it just, no.
I was going to throw this in. I just heard this the other day on the news. O'Reilly's coming out with a book.
Oh, no. We covered that.
Written by his longtime companion.
Yeah, we covered that. And I only interrupt because I've already kicked a lot of furniture over that book in the first place.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No. Don't apologize. Killing Jesus.
Was he really educated at some Ivy League upper crust school, O'Reilly?
I doubt it.
Because that's what they tout, you know, that he went to this really, you know. But he just seems like a bully, you know. I don't know, you know, just like I don't know what they would, you know, just somebody who just doesn't have a lot of sensitivity, just a thug bully.
He attended, according to Wikipedia, he attended St. Bridget Parochial School in Westbury and Chaminade High School, a private Catholic boys' high school in Mineola.
I bet you that wasn't cheap.
Oh, I doubt if it was.
Where is Mineola?
I have no idea.
Sorry.
We'll wait for somebody to... Yeah. He claims to have... a B.A. from Marist, an M.A. from Boston University, and a Master's of Public Administration from Harvard.
Well, I got to tell you something. There's a group of people. There are a group of people, Catholics. I don't think Lottie's on the phone call, but there's a group of Catholics called the Mary Knowles, who are very cool people, and also the people in Latin America that started the liberation theology movement. You don't hear much about those people either. But
largely because they were suppressed, Larry.
How many nuns did they kill in Nicaragua?
You mean with American taxpayer dollars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite a few, yeah.
Oh, wait. That could actually happen here in America?
Honest to God.
Yes.
God's country?
Yeah. Well,
us invading somebody for no reason? That never happens.
Well, we had a reason because these folks were corrupting the right wing political dictatorship that we were paying for.
You know, Bob, there's something that goes on when people get frustrated, and they're constantly and they get frustrated, and then they're so frustrated that they end up turning the very legitimate frustration that they feel, they turn it in on themselves because they feel that there's no proactive way of dealing with the anger, and they just end up having a nervous breakdown or going crazy, and then they start they just stop doing things, and then they start lashing out and stuff. And I'm trying to figure out a way that we can be proactive with some of our anger, which is legitimate, without having the rest of society look at us like we're a bunch of immature people that have just decided to have a tantrum. Like a lot of the professors.
No, the immature people are the ones who believe the horse shit. That's the ones that are immature.
You know, I'm going to take out my...
anybody.
Is that why I want to break into a couple of verses of I Don't Want to Be a Pinhead No More?
Duncan, what were you going to say?
I was just going to tell you, I'm going to take out my frustration on an oak tree that I... across the street. It was growing up into my cable line. And pinching it off last year, and I trimmed it down to just the trunk. It's on the neighbor's property, and he said he was going to take it out, but his wife said he'll cut the rest of it out. Well, he never touched it, and it's got all this stuff growing out of it now. So they're gone to New York. So I'm going to get the chainsaw out, go across the street, finish taking the rest of the tree down.
Well,
if you want to borrow that chainsaw, I got to talk to my second wife.
Well, so an electric chainsaw.
Don't bother.
Because I'm kind of at a place, during the civil rights movement, you had Martin Luther King that was talking about nonviolence, and I understand where he was coming from, and I accept a lot of that. But then I can also look at Malcolm X.
Yep.
And I can say I understand where Malcolm X is coming from.
Yeah, that's two sides to a story, which there are usually two, maybe plus, parts to stories. Yeah, you're right.
You know, so I don't know how to get the two sides of me together and get them to cooperate with each other.
Well, you know, the frustration is very broadly held, guys, because I just got a note from Marty saying I feel the need to go to a batting cage and take my frustration out on a bucket of baseballs.
Hey, he's right. That's a good way to do it.
Go for it.
It's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah. The driving range is good. Innocent little golf balls.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think it's bothering me a lot more because you reach a certain age and you know you can't. I made my share of mistakes. I was going to one of the top high schools in the city of Cleveland, and I hated it. And I was living in a housing project built under FDR's rule. Thank you, FDR. It was a nice place. I mean, well built. I just kissed off the school and took a high school equivalency test and passed it, and that's that. You know, the hell with it. I should have gone on. You know, my IQ was high enough. All my adult friends were unhappy with me. But I know a lot of my friends who are college graduates today, and they didn't do much better because of the changes in the society. You didn't pick the right area, you know. Bob's an intelligent, well-educated man. And here he sits talking with us. I don't know.
Yeah, from West Virginia. You know,
Well, a lot of my buddies were, when I was a kid, were. And the guy that taught me bass fishing was from Kentucky, so, you know, I got no problems there. And it's just that poor people And it was, by God, I mean, when I started listening to music, folk stuff, there was a song that I heard, Payday Don't Come with Coal Creek No More, and the woman was commenting on a disaster. And you know more about that than I ever thought of, Bob. That's your, you know, and you're seeing a new disaster, and you're fighting against it. And
yeah, it's a newer one, but it's the same old model, Bill.
Yeah, the model stays the same. The model is, how much money can we make, no matter what we have to do to make it? I always said that the ultimate capitalist was the guy with that big 9mm robbing people. Minimal, you make the minimal investment for the maximum return. Is not that what capitalism is theoretically the bottom line? I
mean, and people be damned.
Yeah, it seems to be the way it was. You and I were talking Civil War stuff last night, and I have such a bad attitude about the the leadership class down there. It hurts. To this day, it bothers me. If you walk enough of those fields and you read enough stuff about what men did there, the bravery of the men on both sides was amazing. But for what? You know? I wish there was some... We tried that stuff in the 60s. I belonged to different groups, and protesters and everything else under the sun that we could do, and we thought we had done something when Nixon finally told us that secret plan he had how to end the war. The one he ran on in 68.
Yeah, but he wouldn't tell us unless we gave him the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah. Cynicism is my middle name, I know that, but how, you know, when you lay the stuff out by side by side, I feel for you guys who are younger than me, because God knows what's coming around the corner. We don't know. God knows.
And since Bill, you're talking about Nixon's secret war. I was a part of it.
Oh, I watched friends that went over there. Yeah. Oh, I'd like to miss it.
I got to Thailand 10 days after the bombing of Cambodia stopped.
Oh man!
Yeah. And before that, I was working on spy planes. We're taking pictures of Vietnam.
Yep. See, I've read a lot about the French involvement, and I knew a little bit before we got in there. And I wanted to join the Army when I was a kid. And then fifth grade, I picked up a copy of a book called All Quiet on the Western Front. And, you know, partway through it, I say, this is written by a German. This was written by our enemies. I'll be damned. And that changed me around totally. Because if you read enough Civil War stuff when you were a kid like I was, you know, you looked up to these guys and you said, well, this is a good, honorable way to do good for the country. And you were over there. Did you join, or did they ask you to come?
I joined because I was going to get asked to come.
Yeah, that's
my draft number was 74, and the year before, they'd taken everybody in my little town up to, like, 170-something.
Yep, yeah. So
wasn't till a year or so ago, I found out a guy that was in my high school class was killed in Vietnam. I don't remember. I went to the 10th and 20th year class reunions, and I don't remember anybody ever talking about it.
Well, that's a lot of guys who served. I talked to my friends whose dad served in World War II, and I asked him, he was on ships in the Pacific. And I said, you know, well, what type of ship? And what? They never asked their father, and their father never talked. And because guys who were through the mill, a lot of them couldn't talk about it. And I can see it. I can understand it. They wanted me, and when I was 18, which would have been 61, they wanted me. And then they said, you're short, you wear glasses, blah, blah, blah. But now in 64 or 5, they're calling me back up saying they can change that. Because, you know, what's his name? I keep forgetting his name. The first, the guy from South Carolina, was it? The general that went over there was running the show for the first time in many years. Bob, who was he?
Oh, Westmoreland?
Westmoreland.
Yeah, did.
Yeah. And then they brought in...
these people don't value life like we do guy.
Yes. Yeah, Abrams... A couple of my buddies that had fought in World War II had fought with the 3rd. I think Abrams was a tank commander in Patton's 3rd Army. But he got the assignment next. That's why they named who they named the modern tank after, Abrams. And if they haven't changed it by now, I don't even know if they're still building because of the the Arabs and the Israelis went after each other in the Sinai with a lot of shoulder-fired anti-tank weapons that made somewhat of a difference at that point about armor, you know. But hell, you know, the scientists keep working on stuff like that. And the hell with everything else. That's yeah. What bothers me, you know.
Hey, guys, stand by. I'm going to try to bring some callers on board. We've got two slots open, and I'll see what we can do.
Well, I hope I didn't argue with somebody and chase them.
Oh, you didn't. You didn't. We're fine. Because, Hold on. Stand by. Hey, who have I got? Hello? Yeah. No, that's Jim.
I had to recall in on another phone. My phone died.
Oh, okay. So that was you. All right. So let me bump that button. I hope I didn't disconnect. I think that was. I get so confused. I can't wait till I have a. No, I'm never going to have a staff. Hold on. Hey, who I got?
It is I.
Hey, Jim. What's happening? We got Jim, and Bill. And over in the Mary Skype group, we have Duncan, Sergi, Grant, and Larry.
And you've got Rufus Rupert on the other line.
Oh, very nice, very nice.
And let me tell you, Jim, I really enjoy these Fridays / Thursdays on the front porch. They're very cool. They're like way laid back. I like them.
Okay, and now I'm going to try to bring on the fourth line. Stand by. Hey, who have we got?
That's just me again, Bob. You cut me off the last time.
Oh, was that? Yeah, okay.
Who's on the third line?
We've got Jim, Kevin, and Bill on the phone, and Duncan, Sergi, Grant, and Larry in the Skype group.
Jim A and Jim B.
Yeah.
If anybody else wants to call in, shoot Bob an email, and I'll disconnect. So, if anybody else wants to call in.
Oh, hey, I gotta share this with you. I was just reading an account of the incident in D.C. today. One of the eyewitnesses to whom the New York Times reached out, a lobbyist for the American Petroleum Institute, just happened to be on Capitol Hill today. Just happened to.
Wait, how many people were killed at that? Was anybody killed?
None. I mean, unless you count the mother of the toddler who didn't have a gun, didn't have a bomb, and just got, you know.
If only the lobbyist could have given his life for the toddler, that, you know, I mean, I think that would have been a gracious thing to do. But
there's also a story about how Daryl Issa ducked back down into, you know, there's a tunnel that runs between the office buildings and the Capitol itself,
yep.
And he was barreling along. And told some Capitol police officer, "Get out of my way! I'm going back to the Capitol." Because, you know, he's Daryl damned Issa, damn it.
He's a damn patriot, god damn it. Get out of his way.
Yeah.
No, he's an asshole.
Well, there's that too, Jim.
Well, you're correct, Jim.
Okay,
wait, one at a time, please. Jim. Jim A.
Jim A, is that me?
No, you're...
A lot of times when I speak, it's with a lot of sarcasm, because I've seen this crap for my entire life, growing up, and this doesn't surprise me. The only thing that surprises me is the stupidity of the American people to put up with it. And I kind of understand that, because they're easily fooled, but... I'm kind of getting tired of it. America, wake the F up.
Well, you know, you're Verizon. Get that house. Here's your credit cards. Put your ass in debt.
Hey, you guys will love this. There's apparently video out there. I just got this from Americans Against the Tea Party. There's video out there of representing Renee Elmers, a repig-licking from North Carolina, probably some sort of godforsaken teabagger, who told WTVD Raleigh the following, that she refuses to give up her pay during the shutdown because, and this is the quote, I need my paycheck. That's the bottom line.
Gee whiz.
I wonder if the Capitol Police needed theirs today.
Well, Bob, I'll tell you something about that. They're just peons. They're not real citizens.
Okay, hang on. Jim. Other Jim.
That's okay.
No, go.
No, that ought to tell you something about the sense of honor these people have. They don't have any type of honor, and they don't even acknowledge, really, the contents of the oath they've taken.
I know my congressman made sure the local paper knew he wasn't going to take his paycheck. So I think most of the Republicans are doing that shit, calling their local papers or local TV stations.
Mm-hmm. I just wondered. I just wondered if that would coincide with the deposits that are being put in their bank accounts.
Well, I think legally they can't serve for free.
Mm. What's in the laws on that?
There's a statutory ban on that.
Well, I wonder who's going to hurt any of them, Bob.
I wonder who served that.
Yeah.
I know Franken and Heidi Heitkamp said they're donating their checks to charity.
God bless them.
Well, then it becomes a question of what the charity is. Heidi Heitkamp?
I don't know. I know. I've seen the one that Franken was. It was all. I forget. The
I mean,
name
we know.
It
we know who.
Like pretty good.
We know who one of Heidi Heitkamp's favorite charitable organizations is.
NRA.
Yeah.
I was going to give it to the NRA, but who knows?
I belonged to it until I found out. I said, "What am I doing this for?" They didn't buy my last gun. The hell with them, you know. Well, get a job and buy their own, you know. So.
Get a job.
You know, Jan and Jerry out in Vegas just dropped a note in. We have no voice in Washington, D.C., no voice speaking for us. This is what we need desperately, you know, to have a real voice, to have someone speaking out.
Well, to them out in Las Vegas, since I used to resident there, and I will be soon again, somehow I don't know how, but I just want to recite a Neil Young line. Keep on rocking in the free world.
Oh, man, that's hard to top. Oh, thanks going out, by the way. Sal is there almost every night. Sal's the only individual who has helped out this evening. We've had two contributions in the last 2 days, so we are $30 out of about $430 that we needed to raise.
Okay, Bob, let me tell you this. I'm going to send you $25 or $30 tomorrow.
I'm not trying to guilt the group there. That's not what I'm just trying to keep people.
It has nothing to do with guilt the group. I want to contribute because I think you do a valid. I love your show, and I'm semi-conscious aware of the capitalist American system. You know, I know how things work, so I'm going to do that.
Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you very much.
And if that inspires anybody else, go ahead, right, join in. Match my $30, if that's... I don't know how you all do that crazy thing. I kind of know how to do some stuff on a computer, but some stuff I'm just kind of like, duh, you know?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, just saw this update. John Boehner is swearing. He is swearing that he won't let the government go into default on October 15th. Now, I don't know about y'all, but that kind of tells me that we're going into default on October 15th.
Well, Bob, I think there's a lot of Republicans who are beholden to business, and they don't want this shit going down either.
No, they don't.
But there's a lot of folks who are just tied to it through what we would call Joe McCarthyism. They're back in that mindset.
Well, what's fascinating here is that he's willing to violate what he calls, or what is called the Hastert rule, that was brought in under Denny the Sweaty Wrestler Hastert,
yeah,
that says that no bill reaches the floor without it having a consensus of support from the majority party, to wit, the Republicans. And that's why, the House could pass a clean, continuing austerity resolution, because we can't forget that if we go back to the previous budgetary levels with a continuing resolution, it is merely a continuing resolution that continues the brutality of the sequestration. Okay, but they could, one of those could get through the House. The shutdown never needed to happen. But Boehner, burned out Merlot head that he is so afraid of the teabaggers that he won't let that. There are at least 17 Republicans who would vote with a unified Democratic caucus to pass a continuing resolution from the Senate, but he won't let that happen. But he says he'll bypass the Hastert rule, which is not even a rule, to keep the country from going into default.
I can't imagine that Wall Street wants the country going into default in this day and age of an international economy.
Well, the weird thing is about that is, and I had a little run through with my family. I talked to one of my sisters, and she quickly, we were talking just over the phone, and she was telling me about and somehow she inverted the Obamacare thing and blah blah blah, and she's got a child who's born really screwed up, and they kind of went into debt. I don't know what the story is. Y'all still there?
Everybody here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, but yeah. But even to this goddamn MFing day. It was weird because I just talked to her a little bit, and she had to throw out the Obama. No. Insinuate. She didn't throw it out. And I'm like, are you going there? And it's not like I'm broadcasting it to my family. I don't care what they think, but she's like, she really thinks it's like the private corporation thing is a better idea. I mean, the whole campaign would be, why trust companies that are in business to make money at no, that's their main idea, to make money as opposed to this, you know?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, something else that happened today, you know, we've talked about the 14th Amendment quite a bit lately. Jay Carney, the spokesman for the White House, stated that there is no way, none, zero, zip, zilch, nada, there is no way that President Obama would use the 14th Amendment to unilaterally raise the debt ceiling to keep a default from happening.
Well, that would, from what I've heard on TV, mm-hmm, and a little bit I've watched, because I do watch a little bit of it, that would mean definite impeachment.
Yeah, I think that's a fact.
What's that?
I think that's an absolute fact, and his lawyers are telling him he doesn't have the authority.
Play it offhand. I mean, if worst comes to worst, throw it. Yeah, I mean, it's like a poker game. Yeah, you know? It's like worst comes to worst.
Oh, and going back to the member of the House of Representatives who said she needs her paycheck. It's that simple. Ron and Raleigh just dropped us a note. Renee Elmers, Virginia XXX Fox. You bet your ass, they're teabaggers. A new right winger has thrown his hat in the ring to run against Kay Hagan in the Senate. He's a Christian minister from Charlotte who's running on a tax-cutting platform. The irony of a no-paying tax minister running on a tax-cutting platform had me running the rabbits in my yard.
Hey,
folks, if I can ask a naive question.
Sure.
What are the implications of the government going into default? What happens as a result of that? and what are the implications of it, either positive or negative, and what might happen or what probably may happen as a result of it?
There's no positives.
There are no positives. It means that we go into default and we can't pay our bills, and we can't pay our bills. And when you can't pay your bills, your ass is in a sling. And that that means everything starts to shut down. What happens to you when you can't pay your bills?
Well, the point is if they decided that they wanted to raise taxes, and if they wanted to put money into develop the economy from the bottom up, then people would have the money to be able to spend, and they'd be able to revive the economy, and it wouldn't be trickle down anymore. It would be bottom up, and it would help
You're talking.
You know where I'm going with this, or am I wrong?
I do, but you're talking about a lot of time there. And we don't have that much time at
Amen.
All. I mean, when you come down to a certain period of the clock, when the clock hits 12, that's it. You're either there or you're not.
Right, and the thing that must be borne in mind is that the debt ceiling relates to debt that has already been incurred. It's not about stuff in the future. It's about bills that already are waiting to be paid. And so that means defaulting on bond implications, and that in turn means screwing the whole planet, because every country on this planet buys United States Treasury bills.
Yep.
Same.
And because you're not going to get a call from Guido telling you that he's going to be there on the front door.
But in my reading of Thoreau and Scott or what
Oops.
Stand by, y'all.
I added Jason. That's the noise you hear.
Yeah, yeah. You were saying, Larry, about reading Scott Thoreau.
Reading Thoreau, the Lester Thoreau and Robert Heilbronner, they say that that businesses go into debt every day, and they go into debt they invest because they believe that going into debt is going to ultimately bring them into solvency later, and that the whole thing about the government debt, it really doesn't hurt generations down the line, because the money just disappear.
And Larry, that's all true. Debt is okay, but it is when you refuse to pay those debts. You know, a business that refuses to pay its debts ceases to be a business.
There is no there.
Yeah. So it's kind of apples and oranges, Larry. Debt is not the problem. You've got these third-way Democrats and middle-of-the-roaders and stuff who want a grand bargain or who want to do, who think that Granny isn't hungry enough yet and that we've got to do something about the national debt. That's a bunch of hogwash. But the fact of the matter is, if we go belly up on bond, and bonds are paid off every hour of every day, okay? Because we're talking about 30-year bonds, 10-year bonds, lots of treasury notes.
That's it. The cycle continues.
Right, and if that cycle gets interrupted, a lot of people get screwed. A lot of people who hold our debt get screwed. And if they get screwed, their economies tank. If their economies tank, well, pretty soon. Pretty soon the that's a real domino theory.
Okay, so it's like what happened with the banks when the economy imploded after the subprime, it's kind of like that sort of a situation, or similar anyway. So what do we do if these Republicans aren't going to raise the debt ceiling and they're going to let the government fall apart,
Did you see what they were up to today with selling off government land?
They wanted to sell it off so they could privatize it, right?
Well, no, they want to use the money to pay off the national debt.
Oh, my God. The BLM needs the money.
They just introduced a bill today, that I heard. The Republicans did.
Well, the Republicans shrank the... Well, I shouldn't just blame Republicans. I mean, this ain't Republicans.
I think it was that Jason Chaffetz dude from Utah.
Yeah, well, you know, they've delivered, whatever has happened over the last 30 years, they've created the shrunk down economy, and now they're going to force all of us to have to live with the consequences that they created. And, you know, I mean, I shouldn't say they, because we are they, but in, yeah, you're but in, you know,
we, not
but
they.
But, you know, I mean, the economy shrunk, and they want to shrink it more rather than expand it. And that doesn't make any sense to me, but then I don't have the mindset. I don't understand the philosophical point of view of the trickle down, you know, they just want to starve all of us, and then we'll all die, and then the economy will go back to equilibrium. That's what free market, free
do understand the economics is. Point of blue, like, point of view.
It's like
the way they want
like,
to stop.
Hey, two people can't talk at the same time.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Larry, just
okay.
Go, Jim.
Yeah, dude. No. That's the philosophical point of view. They want you to continue to do your work and just die, and do it till the end. Just like they tried to raise the retirement age up to 70, they just want you to do your work, be a good servant, and they'll throw you a little chocolate chip or mint chip and just die. That's where these bastards come from.
And the sad part is. You what?
I'm in the mayor's office.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the sad part is that their philosophical view has a flaw in it, because if we're not making, we being the 99%, aren't making enough money to pay taxes equal to what we're paying out in services, even for wars and things like that, then the national debt grows even larger.
No, Kevin, wait a minute, Kevin. You gotta sort of dig something, and that is this: the right wing and the baggers, birthers, tenthers, deathers, and assorted booger eaters don't think we're paying taxes in the first place.
Oh, I know.
They think that the millionaires and billionaires are the ones carrying this country.
Yep, I agree. But what they're going to find out with that point of view is that it doesn't work. Watch these people if that hurricane hits, say, Louisiana, and watch Bobby Jindal. Watch Bobby Jindal be crying for federal funds. They want their cake, and they want to eat it.
No, but this, but okay, yeah, I'm down with some of that, Kevin. But this, what we're doing here is we are departing from the fundamental understanding of what it is they're up to here. This, this isn't political maneuvering. This is a damned revolution. All right. The continuing resolution, the budget crisis, the debt ceiling, all of the things that the Repiglicans have done are part of a transgenerational attempt to destroy this country. It's got elements of eugenics in it, it's got elements of fascism in it, and it's got tons of elements of Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand and all of those filthy hyper-capitalist profiteers. But at the end of the day, this is a revolution. There's nothing happening in the shutdown that they haven't been begging to have happen since Barry Goldwater.
Yeah, well, that's true. Bob, may I speak?
Go ahead, Jim.
I've seen some of the flags that these people carry, and they're emblazoned with a 2 on them, meaning a second revolution. And that's been going on ever since the Tea Party came into existence. They have a 2, meaning the second revolution.
Yeah, they kind of know exactly what they're doing. And the people of America.
Hey, Jim, hold on. Let Jim finish.
I'm sorry.
No, but the trouble is these fools don't realize that revolutions devour their own children. And what they don't realize, in my opinion, and maybe I'm wrong here, that when you have a revolution and it starts, good luck, and, you know, Katie bar the door.
Yeah, don't stand by the fan,
Jim, you're
right.
It's going to consume you, too.
Yep.
Or them, too. It will.
And Jan and Jerry just sent a note asking, Bob, are the teabaggers the ones doing this? Yes, the teabaggers are the ones doing this.
Oh, yeah. But
I mean, I've got a note here from Kate. Now, just let this rattle around for a minute. Kate makes a couple of really good observations, and she also jumped in and helped out and took us up to $40 for this evening. So thank you very much, Kate. She says, has anyone suggested that the dead woman who was allegedly insane in D.C., might she have been in the rage that I and a lot of others are reacting to the fact that 9 million women are dumped from WIC? She says, beyond that, no other comment here. All of this is way too much for me to process. But then, get this, okay? This would be funny if it weren't so damn tragic. Kate says, by the way, some teabagging ass was heard to remark, what do you mean there are 3,400 cattle guards on federal land? They should be farred. Cattle guards. Anybody know about the cattle business?
Yeah, I know what a cattle guard is, but it doesn't have anything to do with armed men.
Right. It's a piece of equipment. It's, you know, things that keep cattle off of railroad tracks.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a barred
road.
Yeah. The 3,400 cattle guards.
I live next to a cattle ranch.
Yeah, so you know, Duncan. Yeah. Well, the teabagger wants them farred. And all Kate says is, oh, my God, we are so screwed. And it's true. But it's the teabaggers. I mean, you've got members of the Republican Party who are admitting this problem never would have come to fruition were it not for the fact that these people, they're in gerrymandered safe districts, these Republican Congress critters, but the thing is, they're only safe districts against Democrats. They are not safe against the teabaggers. You follow? So
right.
They're scared to death because they've seen the power of the teabaggers. They will go in and primary your ass. We have a senator from Utah now named Mike Lee, who is a huge part of the problem, who is there because they primaried a longtime sitting Republican senator because they thought he was playing just a little too much footsie with, you know, the liberals.
What they do, Bob, is if a Republican in this state decides that they're going to vote for a tax increase or something, which is what Democrats might want, if the Republicans get all, you know, they will. They'll run somebody against you, and not only will they run somebody against you, they will also trash your reputation and make it so that you cannot show your face again. I mean, they will ruin people who decide to compromise with Democrats. This is something that the senator right now, who's in Contra Costa County, who used to be. I said, whatever happened to the moderate Democrats? He said, I used to be one of them. And he said, that's what the Republicans do. If they even make a move to compromise and try to do something to raise taxes, not only are they out of office, not only do they run somebody against you, but they dog your reputation. They do your reputation dirt. I don't know if happens in other places.
They will ruin your reputation any way they possibly can. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, and they'll chase you out of they'll chase another Republican out of office. I mean, this is a case of exactly what you were talking about, Jim. This is a case of a revolution eating its own children.
Well, now that, Bob, let me throw this in. I just experienced this today. I was talking to one of my younger sisters, and I had not one but two brain aneurysms. Hello?
Yeah, you're there.
You're there.
Okay. So I had two brain aneurysms when I was younger, 10 and 12. And the great fun, more fun than humans should be allowed to have. I'm being sarcastic as shit. But there's a quid pro quo to getting to live after the brain surgery. You know, and like the first one was a loss of vision out of my right eye. I don't see out of my right eye at all. I got some vision out of my right eye, not a lot. The second one was dyslexia. I was dyslexic, and then Jesus threw in another one because he didn't. You know, that goes in that bullshit about like God doesn't give you anything you can't handle. Well, I guess I'm still handling it. But the second one was epilepsy. Now, fortunately, their modern medicine gave me phenobarbital, which I can control my seizures by pretty much. Are you still there?
Yep.
All right. So, but my sister today out of the blue just, I'm looking forward to the Affordable Care Act like you. I mean, I wish it was single payer, blah, blah, blah. But this is best we can do at the moment. Maybe within my lifetime we can get it down to, but it's, you know, single payer. Although I'm starting to doubt that. But because America's so goddamn stupid, and that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But just dealing with her. I'm just trying to talk with her, and she just started throwing up. Well, out of the blue, like this Obamacare crap. It was almost bizarre. And then the weird thing about that is she's got some kids, and one of them happened to be born with a bad heart to some extent. And the insurance, they reached the insurance company's rate of whatever it was, $1 million, and they're still covering it to some extent. But she's clueless. She's goddamn effing clueless. You know what I mean?
Jim A?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Jim B, over. I feel like we, this reminds me of older times, but number one, man, you have my greatest empathy for what you've been through with brain aneurysm, loss of sight, and also the other attendant problems, particularly with epilepsy.
Yes.
Yes. My sister has, I think it's called petite mal. And
yeah, well, that I have to go for another examination because I'm aware of the grand mal and I can control them. Thank the non-existent sky spook. That's my own personal opinion. Because of chemistry and phys, whatever, but phenobarbital that keeps me from having epileptic seizures where I lose total control of my body and my being and my consciousness. But I've got like another appointment to see a doctor, and I don't even know if the appointment's open. With LSU to see if I about my petite seizure thing.
Jesus.
So, listen, gentlemen, may I say something real quick here?
Go, Jim.
My sister was diagnosed with petite mal, or they called it petite mal, back in 1960, and I can remember. My parents being with her in her bedroom while she was experiencing these seizures and things of that nature, and of course they wouldn't let me in there. And then the next thing, they were on their way to Canada, where they had somehow found a doctor in England who referred them to a doctor in Toronto. and through drugs like Mycelene and other things of that nature, she was she's been able to live a fairly normal life and do things like that. But, you know, even with that experience that she's had, and it would appear to me as though a person who's gone through what you've gone through and what she's gone through would have some compassion. But yet, my sister won't even talk to me when I talked, when I tried to talk to her about some of the stuff we've been discussing tonight.
Why? Why won't she talk to you?
Because she thinks that there's just that black man in that White House, number one. That's one of the...
Oh, my God. You kidding me?
No. And she's a school teacher, retired, and a very intelligent woman, and extremely well-read, erudite in many respects. But she, I guess, has been so...
Indoctrinized.
Well, not indoctrinated, but because of other physical and mental problems she's had, or she has become... inured, or there's another word that begins with a B, that brutalized in her own mindset, that there are other people who are well and she is not, and she, I guess she's sort of transferred that to me. That's just been, you know, and this is very personal.
See,
you know,
and Jim, if I could just interject here for a moment. Both Jims have brought out stories, and I hear them from my position here, from other members of the Horn family commune, and it drives home the... You'd be surprised the number of people who have similar stories. I don't mean necessarily with the gravity of the health issues, but have people... I got one, okay? I got a Fundy sister that will not speak to me, and will not speak to me till the day she dies. Okay? Because of my politics. This nation, I mean, Bill has a vast storehouse of knowledge about the Civil War. And we're all used to that sort of cliche about the Civil War, that it turned brother against brother, and father against son, and mother against son. I think Bill's referenced the fact that General George Thomas's family in Virginia basically disowned him and would not speak to him any further when he refused to turn traitor. Okay? We are all used to talking about the Civil War in those terms. But we live that today, right now. That is the depth to which this country is divided. It has gotten all the way into the family structure.
Yep.
And it has been done, oddly enough, by people who say that they are in defense of the family. The story that I read that was kind of, I mean, it's kind of a good story about the decent grandfather who refused to disown his grandson for coming out, but his daughter, the mother, did. So he disowned her. This, and whether it's, you know, whether it's sexual politics, gender politics, eco-politics, labor politics, on and on and on. We are a shattered country right now, and very few people have the nerve to point it out, but at least that conversation is happening here. So I thank you both.
Well, Bob, you're certainly welcome, and, you know, I can certainly appreciate what you're saying, because I have been asked by family members and things of that nature, like, you know, how could you change from where you were and what you've been brought up to believe and this, that, and the other? And basically the question is, was this to me, won't you join us for fellowship's sake? And my reply to them has been this: when you are sent to heaven for doing the biddings of your conscience, and I am sent to hell for not doing the biddings of mine, do you want to join me for fellowship's sake?
Very much understandable.
Well, Jim, that's hey. Between you and your God. I'm an atheist. I don't give a rat's ass about any of that crap.
Speaking,
the sentiment transcends religion, Jim. Hey, Duncan, you were going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, right now, I've got my 95-year-old dad in the next room watching Fox News. He goes out to coffee most mornings wearing a Tea Party Patriot hat. And
oh, boy.
My sister was going through my mom's room stuff after she passed away and found this Rush Limbaugh for President t-shirt that he wears now every so often. Now, you think I got some... It's hard for me to bite my tongue.
Yeah, you gotta have. Yeah, Duncan, you gotta have a couple of those Thorazine dart in the neck moments every now and then. You know, where you wish for one.
Duncan, you got a history of four in the neck.
Especially when I walk through the front room and Billow the Clown or Sean Hannity's on it, just creeps me out.
Bob, one of the things. Sorry, I'm sorry about that, Duncan. I wasn't sure I was on mute or not, but. One thing that goes along with that, eating the revolution, eating the children, you hear these stories, we all have them, and accidents, disability, unforeseen medical conditions happen to everyone, whether they're the 1% or the 99%. And these people that support the teabaggers, someday they're going to have something happen to them. And they'll find out the revolution has eaten them because they won't have any backup, anything to depend on.
I wanted to ask a question, since we're talking about health care and how people with disabilities and how anybody can become a disabled person at any time. That's, you know, every group of people from every group you can possibly imagine can become disabled. The question that I have to ask is that I downloaded the patient, Affordable Care Act document, which is 906 pages. Is there anything is there a summary of that that explains what it does and what the implications of it, what the regs mean in a much shorter document that I can read?
I'll send you something, Larry, that
I got. Okay, I appreciate that, Dunk. I really do. Thank you.
Let me share a couple of emails that rolled in. With reference, so we got a note from Mark, and with reference to the horrors in Central America perpetrated by the Reagan administration, the School of the Americas was changed to WHINSEC, Mark says, responsible for Archbishop Romero's assassination. The shooter was trained at Fort Benning, Georgia. And Mark says, all for Kathy Lee Gifford's JCPenney's affordable dresses. And he says, love the conversation. Love all of you all. And Mark put a challenge out there of $100. So there's $100 on the table if others will be so kind as to match it. Jan and Jerry with a note. Division. This nation divided because of George W. Bush. You're either with me or against me, patriot or non-patriot. It's very sad. Our old friends, they say, and my family, Jan says, all think that we're nuts here.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's more profound than perhaps we take into account, and I'm glad that we can at least have an open conversation. I'm going to throw something out there now that's really, really personal, but I'm just going to mention this for the sake of the good of someone. Everybody knows that smoking sucks. Okay, there's no middle ground. It sucks. It's a terrible, terrible addiction, and it's brutal. And it's hard, hard, hard to quit. But if someone suggests that you as a smoker get on Chantix, the prescription drug that is said to help people quit smoking.
Oh, hell no.
And I suppose it has helped some people, but in the last 24 hours in my family, we've had a suicide.
Yep. Well, oh my God.
I'm sorry.
Let me tell you something about Chantix, and I know it's not in the commercials. It's that it may cause suicide, but it also may cause epileptic seizures. And I smoke, and in fact, I'm smoking a goddamn fucking cigarette right fucking now. But I ain't taking Chantix.
Suicidal ideation is one of the apparently known risks, and in this case, it apparently worked, and a big segment of my family has been just absolutely destroyed with grief in the last 24 hours.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And I don't say that as a solicitation of sympathy, but as a warning to others.
Oh, my condolences, Bob.
You deserve condolences. Your family deserves condolances for that.
You should sue
really.
Fucking bad.
I'm very sorry. And
the question coming in, the Horn family? No, not in the Horn family. My family. My extended family.
Well, you know, I think you know my story, Bob. When I quit because of the forest fires.
Oh, yeah.
I got deadly sick, and then I tried Chantix, and I couldn't sleep. That shit kept you up, and you toss and turn, and it was just horrible.
Yeah, and this was not an individual who had some sort of a history.
I gave it away to a young friend of mine, and he was able to make it work, and he quit smoking with it.
But apparently the risks are very, very real, and like I said, I just put that out there so that people will understand that all that stuff that they say very fast at the end of a pharmaceutical commercial really should be taken into account.
Yeah. And there's a little itty-bitty, hard-to-read little thing that's in the box with it.
Oh, yeah, that's it. I mean, you have to have an electron microscope to read that stuff.
Yeah.
One thing I want to tell you to do, ask you to do with that, is report that to the FDA.
It's not for me.
Yes.
It's not for me to do. It's not for me to do.
Well, if the family will do that.
And the FDA, by the way, right now, the people to whom you would report that
are
shut down.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. This is one of those evenings. I don't know where the time goes, guys, but it has gone, and it has gone in a sure enough hurry. Thanks a lot, everybody. It's been a wonderful conversation, and I appreciate it. And we'll be back Monday. Sorry I'm not going to be here tomorrow, but some of these things are unavoidable. Like I said, I would rather be here than there.
Bob, I just want to say I'm going to send you some money in the next couple of days. I don't know how I'll figure it out, but I'll...
Well, don't do anything that damages you, okay? Don't do that. Nobody ever should.
Be that I die. And
Bob, please give our condolences. I can't speak for anybody else, but please give our condolences to your extended family. I'm very sorry to...
Well, okay? Thank you, Larry. And thanks, everybody. We'll talk on Monday. Y'all take care. Thanks for a great front porch.
Good night, gents.
Bye now.
You're welcome, Bob.
Night.
Night. And so Thorn in the Porch Thursday, a little experiment comes to a close. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks for the kind support that keeps all of this going. Be back Monday. Rerun tomorrow night. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, obviously Sparky, who is the moderator, is the moderator of the Skype Horn Malloy chat group. They'll be going live midnight Eastern time, about 12:05 on Friday, right after Malloy and Rick Smith. And thanks to our mods in the chat room, Sparky and Lottie and Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox, thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. That's where you go to help to begin to be a part of the struggle against mountaintop removal and the agonies of Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, Judy. It's all for you. Have a great weekend, y'all. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.